We will go ahead and get started. The time is 9:35 a.m. on July 28th, and I call this meeting of the Committee on Behavior Analysts to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly notified of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Ms. Malice, would you please call roll?
Ms. Benton?
Present.
Dr. Stenhouse?
Here.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey? Not here yet. And Dr. Rates? Not quite here yet. So we have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Malice. Hopefully, we will have those other two committee members joining us soon. But we will go ahead and move on to some. To agenda item number three, which is remarks and announcements. At this point, I would like to extend the gratitude of the committee to our board staff for the immense amount of work that they do to prepare for the meetings. We have an ever-growing body of behavior analysts in the state of Arizona, which requires careful oversight to ensure that we have ethical practice occurring in the state of Arizona, protecting the public. Also, thank you to fellow committee members, whether they have joined the meeting or not. Everyone volunteers their time in order to ensure this mission of public safety for those receiving behavior analytics services in the state of Arizona is overseen. So thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to come back in just a little bit to one of the announcements about one of our esteemed committee members, because I would like everyone to be able to offer congratulatory marks to Dr. Stenhoff. So we're going to come back to that one in a little bit. But for right now, it should be noted that the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of the code words provided hourly throughout this meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. Okay, we might actually have to wait on approval of minutes for a couple of these. So perhaps I will come back, because I know the minutes from June 9th, I don't believe we would have quorum right now. Dr. Davey has not joined yet, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, I just received a message. He's about three more minutes until he joins.
Okay, we will come back to the approval of minutes. So I hope everyone is along for the ride as we jump around on this agenda. It's gonna be an exciting meeting here. Okay, with that being said, I would like to go ahead and jump down a little bit to agenda item number. Bum, 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 bum. I'm going to sing while I scroll through the agenda. Agenda item number six. Particularly here, we can hop down to probably the some of the more quick application reviews while we wait for some. Committee members to join. If there's no arguments, perhaps we can move to agenda item number 6B, Behavior Analyst Applications for Licensure by Universal Recognition. Well, there's one. Dr. Rates isn't here yet, so I'm gonna go with one and then move around to others. So could we do applicant number two under agenda item number 6B, that's Mackenzie Schroeder. Dr. Stenhoff, you're the lead on this application.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Schroeder is applying for licensure through Universal Recognition. She's been a BCBA since December of 2021 and a licensed applied behavior analyst in Massachusetts since April of 2022. I'm in good standing. She's also a certifier, was a certified teacher in Arizona until this month. She provided her Arizona driver's license and vehicle registration as proof of residency, and so I don't know any issues with this application and recommend that it be forwarded for approval.
Wonderful. I will come back to the other applicant since Dr. Rates is assigned to that one and she's not joined yet. So I'm going to move down to agenda item number 6C. Agenda item number 6C is requesting approval for telehealth registration via Arizona Revised Rules and Statutes 36-3606. The applicant is Adele Thomas. I am the lead on this application, and I will go ahead with a review. Qualifications for Arizona telehealth registration to provide behavior analytic services in the state of Arizona requires that there are four pieces of information that are supplied, including the individual who is seeking registration's name, their email address, their telephone number, and that information so that they can be contacted quickly, evidence of professional liability insurance, designation of a duly appointed statutory agent for the service of process in this state, as well as evidence of that provider's professional liability insurance and information regarding licensure in another state and a U.S. jurisdiction. With all of this information being said, Ms. Thomas did supply all of the information that was necessary to be listed on the telehealth registry. I did not note any concerns with qualification for this registry and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for potential approval. Okay. Just looking for
people. We didn't get a second, and that's the only one in that category.
Okay, perfect. Is there a second?
A second.
Okay. The motion was made to move this forward to the full board for potential approval by me. It was seconded by Dr. Davis Wilson. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Nay. The motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. I didn't realize that one couldn't be lumped in together. Okay, we will jump up to agenda item number 6A, and we will continue the applicant review process, keeping in mind that we may take a pause in this applicant review process whenever we have all of our committee members join so that we can address some of the other agenda items that typically precede these reviews. Let's move to applicant number 3, Kelsey Robeson. Dr. Stenhoff, you're the lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Robeson was certified as a BCBA in April of 2023. She graduated in December of 2021 from Arizona State University with a master's in special education, emphasis in applied behavior analysis. She received 2,004.25 hours of supervision under two licensed Arizona behavior analysts. I did not know any concerns and would recommend that this move forward to the board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. We will move down to the applicant number 5, Haley Taylor. I am the lead on this application and will review this. Ms. Taylor passed her board certified behavior analyst exam on February 23rd of 2023 after she graduated in August of 2019 through Mary Lou Fulton's Teachers College at Arizona State University. She received her supervision from May 1st of 2021 until December 30th of 2022, accumulating a total of 2,033 hours of supervision, all under a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. This applicant has also been a certified special education teacher since July 9th of 2018, in good standing. I did not note any concerns for this application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Okay, let's move to applicant number 7, Brandy Brewer. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead.
Yes. So Ms. Brewer, apologize, graduated with a master's from University of Cincinnati in 2015. She did pass her exam, became a certified behavior analyst in November of 2018. In review of her documentation, we were noticed that there was only documentation supporting 1,100 hours, just over 1,100 hours, and that perhaps there was a third supervisor that was unable to be contacted for the remaining hours. In view of the information, it does appear that that supervisor is no longer a certified behavior analyst, and therefore we did request a copy of the original forms that had been sent to the BACB so that we could review what hours were completed for her and already signed off on prior to her submitting it for certification. She did supply those forms. I believe you guys should have received them this morning. I had just a couple of questions because generally in order for us to accept the forms from a supervisee, we do need to exhaust all efforts in trying to reach the supervisor. Board staff did make an attempt to reach the supervisor and that went unresponded to. And so I guess my question for Brandy would be, you know, board staff requested proof that she did request this information from a supervisor. She had stated that that was done under an old email. She didn't have access to it. So they requested that she do that again. So I believe we have Brandy on the call. I would be interested to hear just some more on her efforts in getting that form from the behavior analyst or the supervisor who is no longer a behavior analyst.
Yes, I emailed this behavioral analyst. I've been trying to get in touch with her for 2 years now, and have not gotten a response.
And have all the contacts been through like the BACB or through a separate email that you had of her, or did you have any other contacts for her?
She's no longer through the BACB because she's not a registered BCBA anymore. So I emailed her old email and found her online and emailed her as well, but I haven't gotten any contact. I did send the verification forms that she signed off to that were submitted to the BACB for the exam.
Thank you. And just committee members for the record, she does pull on the BACB registry. Her name is spelled a little bit more unique in the placement of the I. So if you do spell it a more common spelling of Jamie, it does not pull up, but it does pull as an expired certification. Whether or not updated emails are available through that, you know, that once her certification is expired and she's no longer practicing, I don't think she has any obligation to keep the board, the certification board apprised of her current location. I am a little bit torn on this one in that I think, you know, we have the copy of the documentation. However, I'm not sure that we have enough documentation to support that we've exhausted the efforts of reaching out to the supervisor. And I think in keeping aligned with what we've done in the past, as well as just for the sake of just Brandy's application, I think having that attempt, those emails of, hey, can you please send in this form so that we can complete this and kind of wrap up the process would then allow for us to say, hey, yeah, no, she's done her due diligence to try to reach out for this information. And at this point, you know, we're willing to accept the BACB forms. On that flip side, this is the first of supervisors that we've had that is expired and no longer practicing as a behavior analyst. And so I do think the circumstances are a little bit different because, again, there is no obligation to maintain any correspondence with her previous work. And as a result, I'm concerned that submitting this as a request for additional information and delaying this application is, I mean, the writing's already on the wall. We kind of can see what is going to happen. So I welcome the committee's feedback on this. Like I said, in the past, we've really relied on them documenting that they have exhausted those efforts. But again, this is the first time this has been somebody who is no longer certified by the board.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Dr. Stenhoff.
I agree, Dr. Davis-Wilson, with that. Your phrasing of the writings on the wall, I would be skeptical that we would get anything from her former supervisor, and I think holding this up wouldn't do Ms. Brewer well. And so I think moving it on to the board for approval would be ideal. So.
I would be in support of that. And thank you, Ms. Brewer, for being here and answering the questions and getting those forms as quickly as possible to board staff. That's much appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I would like to add, Ms. Brewer, it is refreshing to see that you still have these forms. We see that some people that come through, whenever these forms exceed 7 years, they just go straight out the window. And while that is the minimum expectation that you keep it for 7 years, it served you well to have
Thank
held
you.
Up to
this There form. Was some digging involved, but we found
I see that Dr. Davey has now joined our meeting. Do we need to note his arrival time or call attendance for him? Or what's the appropriate step here?
Well, Madam Chair, I'll just capture it in the minutes. So,
okay. Welcome to the meeting, Dr. Davey. Just to fill you in, Dr. Davey, we are hopping around on the agenda to do the best to have the appropriate committee members present. So since you have joined, I am going to have you go to agenda item number 6, applicant 2. You are the lead, Dr. Davey, for Brittany Holdren.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so just so I know where we're at on the agenda, I apologize. I was working on an AC problem. are we just, we're going to do the applications first and then go back through the complaints? Okay.
Yes, we are.
Thank you. And what number application are we? We're on Brittany. Okay. So now we're back.
We're on Brittany, applicant number 62, and we probably will not be going in numerical order.
Fair enough. Thank you for the update. And I did let Heidi know when I arrived, which was a couple minutes before I think maybe you saw me. So I appreciate the comments about the previous applicant. All right. So going forward with Ms. Holder seeking licensure here in the state of Arizona, she indicates that she has multiple licenses, not only in North Carolina, but also in Arizona. She provided information around her supervision experience as well as her employment experience. I would just like to point out to I'll wait to point that out. Educational experience looked good. Obviously, master's degree from Arizona State University after some early work at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, provided all the information with regard to her supervision and her site supervisors. Also worth noting is that when her supervision we'll get to that in a second. Next, I think we'll go with, she answered yes to number 4 with about having pled guilty to a felony or misdemeanor previously, provided information about that, which I think was sufficient. It was also a matter that occurred in 2011, so a significant period of time prior to, from that point until today. No other issues since that moment when she was a minor. Also, we have good indications from all of the from the public schools in North Carolina, as well as her education license. Same for Arizona. All of those are in good standing. She provided, or we were able to pull all of that documentation. Also was able to provide us information on her multiple supervisors. North Carolina is only now bringing licensure online, so no licensure issues there. All were in good standing with the BCBA at the time. And then I thought something that was really cool was that when she was working through her supervision, it was initially being done in North Carolina, but then switched to Arizona. And through the efforts of probably her her program at Arizona State, and maybe perhaps her understanding of Arizona State's statutes and laws around licensure, she quickly pivoted to an individual that was licensed to be able to oversee her practice, her supervision practice and activities in the state of Arizona. And so you will see that on the multiple supervisors form, as well as her explanation below. So kudos to that group on that. I see no issues with this and would like to see it move forward to the board for full approval.
Fantastic. Okay, I think I'm going to go up to applicant number one. Board staff, can you correct me if I'm wrong on this? But applicant number one, Lindsay Bauchia, isn't Dr. Rates recused from this item?
Madam Chair, I don't recall, but I'll research that quickly.
I believe Dr. Stenhoff is recused from Lindsay.
Okay, then I am going to wait on that one until Dr. Rates joins, so we can have as much participation in there as possible. Okay, let's move to applicant number 8, Julia King-Kahn. That is Dr. Stenhoff. You're the lead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. King-Kahn was certified as a BCBA in May of 2020. She graduated in December of 2019 from Ball State University with a Master's of Arts in Applied Behavior Analysis and Emphasis in Autism. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under an Arizona licensed behavior analyst. She also was issued a teaching license in March of this year as well. I didn't note any concerns with this application and recommend it forward to the board for approval.
We will move to applicant number 9, which is Ashley Turner. Dr. Davey, you're the lead.
Yes, just 1 second on that one. Actually, could we skip that one, Madam Chair, for just a moment? I need to pull up my notes, and I'm going to toggle over to them. And the reason I ask is there are over 10 supervisors listed, and so I had some notes about that. So if you could just give me a moment or two to...
Yeah. Absolutely. Dr. Davis-Wilson, let's pivot over to you for applicant number 12, Catalina Rini.
Absolutely. So Ms. Rini just passed her exam in February of 2023. She did a master's from Nova Southeastern University, but did complete the FIT ABA certificate program. Both of those were completed in 2022. She did complete 1,500 hours across 3 supervisors, and it was in a non-license required state, so there are no concerns there. I do want to just note one thing, and that is specific to her education. The degrees that she lists on the application did not include the FIT certificate. So had we not had the transcripts, we would not have had the ABA coursework. So I don't know. I don't know if we want to add a note in that section of the application so it's available to public record that is where she had completed her program. But other than that, I see no other concerns with this application. And once that is clarified for the record, I think this could move forward to the full board for approval. So I don't know, Ms. Malice, if that's something that you would just make a note of, or if you need her to go in and make a note of it. But I know the transcripts aren't necessarily public record, but the application is.
Ms. Malice, do you need that detailed out exactly what is needed from the applicant?
I understand, Madam Chair, what we need to do, so I will reach out just to make sure we have the correct information.
Okay. Fantastic. Dr. Davey, I'll just let you tell me whenever you're ready, and I'll just keep going. All right, we will go to applicant number 13, Hannah Beckham. Dr. Stenhoff, you're the lead.
Thank you. Ms. Beckham was certified as a behavior analyst in April of this year. She graduated in January of 2021 from ASU with a master's in special education emphasis in applied behavior analysis. She received just over 2,000 hours of supervision under multiple Arizona licensed behavior analysts. She was also certified as a special education teacher in July of 2019. I didn't note any concerns and recommend it move forward to the board for approval.
We will move to applicant number 14. Applicant number 14 is Jacob Neufeld. I am the lead on this application and will begin the review. Mr. Neufeld passed his exam on November 30th of 2016 after receiving his Master's of Education from Arizona State University in August of 2016. His supervision ranged from October 12th, 2015 until November 1st of 2016 for a total of 1,533 hours. Supervision occurred in the state of Colorado, which did not require licensure. I did not note any concerns. I believe that Mr. Neufeld has met the qualifications and requirements for licensure in the state of Arizona and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for potential approval. Okay. Dr. Stenhoff, will you take applicant number 16, Cesar Garcia?
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Garcia certified as a BCBA in January of 2022, graduated in October of 21 and December of 21 from the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley with a master's in special education and experimental psychology, respectively. He received 1,533 hours of supervision under two Arizona licensed behavior analysts. Mr. Garcia has been a licensed behavior analyst in Texas since January of 2022. I didn't note any concerns with the application and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. I do know Mr. Garcia is on the call. Mr. Garcia, do you have anything to add to that, or are you good?
You know, just thank you very much. It's a huge sigh of relief.
All right. Well, we're glad you're here. Thank you.
Very glad. And for, oh, Dr. Davis-Wilson, have at it.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to say, I know typically we see the complaints and then the applications. And so the those that have joined for the applications generally have to stay through the complaints. If you have joined today, you are welcome to stay through the entire meeting, not just to get the CEUs, but because there are just a lot of learning opportunities between the application reviews, between the BACB updates and everything else. So I just wanted to throw that little plug out there.
We'll try to throw in some comedic relief as we go through this meeting that could be very, very long in duration. But nonetheless, we do welcome you to join. Okay, we will go ahead and move on to applicant.
Madam Chair, if you'd like, I've got my notes pulled up now. Thank you.
Okay, we will move to applicant number 9, Ashley Turner, Dr. Davey.
Very good. And I appreciate, I just wanted to make sure that I had my notes in front of me just because of probably the request that we'll need to make. So Ms. Turner is coming forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. She's provided information with regard to her experience as well as her education. You know, in her experience, she had listed several autism agencies over the course of for her employment spanning from 2019 through 2022. And as such, in terms of the amount of information that was provided with regard to the supervisors and supervised experience that was provided on the application, it had 8 different individuals from Autism Spectrum Therapies. It had 4 individuals from Hope Bridge, and then, or I'm sorry, 5 individuals from Hope Bridge, and then another individual from Action Behavior Center. So a lot to kind of sort through. In going through the individuals and their licensure and their status with the BACB. There appears to be an issue with an individual, Tessa Garbowski, who was an individual that signed off on supervision for 286 hours with regard to their license. And if I have a moment, I'll be able to point that out, point you guys out to the PDF page with her license. And that is going to be 40 of 45 in our application or in our information. And so we have, there we go. Actually, I stand corrected. I think I got crossed up on that one. Now, it looks like I was looking at the expiry date. So it looks like Ms. Grabowski was licensed in 3/18 of 2021. I think I was looking, I'd circled the license expiration date. So she is actually good to go. All right. With that, no concerns on this application. Let's move it forward for full review.
Can I say something? I'm sorry. Yeah. My name is Ashley Lee. I'm the person talking about. I just had a concern about my last name. Oh. It's actually my main name. It's Ashley Lee. So if you have any questions, please ask.
I wonder why it's turned my file.
I'm sorry. I'm actually surprised it was Turner, because when I moved here to Arizona about 4 years ago, I was married.
Ms. Madam Chair, we will check the record. We'll need to do that outside of this meeting just to trace what happened. I don't know what you entered in the portal or what we, you know, may have entered on the agenda. But at any rate, this is something that staff can exchange information with you to ensure that it's correct for the board meeting next week. So rest assured, we'll take care of this issue in the interim.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was listening. Oh, yeah. And it sounds like me, and it says my maiden name, and I wasn't sure. I was like, oh.
We'll take care of you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
And board staff will do that. And it does look like that the Turner was added into the portal as part of your personal information. And so you can work with board staff to update that.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll just keep you on a roll here, Dr. Davey. Applicant number 11, Tamara Parrish. I will note that I am recused from this item.
Yes. And so thank you very much for that. Ms. Parrish comes forward.
Dr. Davey.
Yep. Am I muted?
I apologize. No, you're good. I just have to note that Ms. Parrish did work for the organization that I was working at as well. I do not recall any interactions. In fact, I think at the time that she did become a more active employee, I was actually transitioning out of work, and then I was actually handed over a lot of the reins for the Tucson office. So I'm good moving forward, other than noting that we worked for the same organization. I was in a director position. I do not feel like I could I would have any problems moving forward. I can review this application.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'll continue. Ms. Parrish lists out her supervisory experience at two organizations, provides good information with regard to the supervisors who were responsible for her supervision hours, as well as, you know, in completing her multiple supervisor's form. The information that she provided was complete, and the verifications look good, and I would move this one forward to the full board.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. We will move to applicant number 17, Amy Ayala, and I will just apologize if I am mispronouncing anyone's name. I promise I do my best to like Google pronunciations and get these right. Ms. Ayala passed her exam in November of 2020 after graduating in May of 2020 with a Master's of Arts in Special Education from Arizona State University. She received 1,504 hours of supervision all in the state of California, where licensure is not required. There are a couple of pieces on here that I think need some attention. One of them would be there are two dates of certification listed for the BCBA certification. If we could just correct that to only list the initial date of certification, my guess is what was listed on the application was the initial date and then the renewal date. So perhaps that's what that is. This person has been a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Texas in good standing since May of 2021. There's also just a little bit of confusion on my part. And if fellow committee members would like to attend to this, on page 13 of the PDF, it notes that supervision occurred under Christina Lund. But the final verification form notes that supervision occurred from Rebecca Krimmer. And those dates do not align. So Christina Lund was from October of 2018 to March of 2021. And Rebecca Krimmer was from May of 2019 until September of 2022. Those hours seem to be counted under each person. I'm not certain who provided the supervision at this point. The applicant did meet the 1500 hours, and whether it was Christina or Rebecca, they were in California. So, you know, there's not that licensure piece, but just for accuracy on the application, I'm not sure which supervisor provided supervision. Fellow committee members, what are your thoughts?
Madam Chair, is Ms. Ayala on the call? Do you know?
I mean, there are some phone numbers on there, but I'm not certain. Ms. Ayala, are you on the call? I'm going to guess not. So perhaps what we could do here, I hate to hold up the application for this reason. Perhaps we could just get clarification on which supervisor provided supervision, as well as the correction of the BACB date of initial certification. Ms. Pakenon?
Madam Chair, just clarifying, would you accept just a correction and a written explanation that staff can facilitate? Or would you prefer something more formal? Does this rise to the level of necessitating a fair? So a correction could be facilitated in time for addition to the next board meeting next week. But if you feel a fair is necessary, then, you know, that would push the application a month.
I think I would feel comfortable with a correction. You know, I would be more concerned if this was a state where maybe one of the supervisors was not licensed and the other was licensed. However, both supervisors were in the state of California, and I think it is just a matter of having a correct form. Fellow committee members, do you have any opposition to that? So for clarification, Ms. Malice, what I would like followed up on by board staff is which supervisor provided supervision. There is a discrepancy between page 13 of the PDF and the final verification form. So just noting who provided that supervision, as well as ensuring that the date of certification on the application is just that initial date of certification, rather than showing two separate BCBA certifications. And if this is met, I do recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval. Okay, we will, and Dr. Raitt still has not joined, correct? Okay. So I'm just going to load her up whenever she comes back. It'll be one after another.
She may never come if you do that to her.
I will have no more applications for anyone else to review. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I'm still looking at this one. I'm a little bit confused. I share the same confusion that you share, Generally, when we avoid the fair process and go to just, hey, board staff, can you administratively address this before next meeting? It's because they're clerical errors. I'm concerned that she's reporting Christina Lund as her supervisor, but the form was received by a whole different supervisor. I don't know, Ms. Malis, did the other supervisors email the form? Is that how you received it?
Yes, Dr. Davis Wilson. All of the final verification did come in from that supervisor, Rebecca.
Yeah, I guess my concern is this appears at the surface to be more than just a clerical error, like not knowing who your supervisor is when it asks who completed your supervision worries me a little bit, because we also have it's not just a clarification of who did it, but if we learn that Christina Lund was one of them, we would need a copy of her. Oh, it's in here. Never mind. I'll do whatever the committee wishes.
Are there any other concerns about board staff seeking the correction versus a fair?
Madam Chair, I think I hear what Dr. Davis Wilson is saying. I also think that the idea that these are California individuals where there's not going to be a hiccup on the licensure, mitigates a little bit of my concern. I would say that if board staff reaches out to get clarification, and they're, board staff's pretty astute in terms of our operations and requirements, that, if they feel as if something is not quite right, then maybe they could circle back to us. I don't know that it's worth holding up through the fair process. The other option, Dr. Davis Wilson, could be that we request the information to be quickly conveyed to board staff so we could look at it as an individual application at the full board meeting Friday. So we have a couple of different mechanisms that we could pull. So maybe if we think of this as like an iterative process, board staff could try to get some clarification. If they feel the clarification is in any way not sufficient, they can pull it and put it on for the full board to review.
Dr. Davey, I actually like that suggestion, and I wonder if it just needs to be reviewed as an individual application either way. I just, the complexity of possibilities around this piece, I just don't want to put the burden on to board staff to try to track all of that down. But if we request that clarification and then it goes next week, to the full board, perhaps you guys can make a decision as to, and that doesn't have to be an individual item, right? That could be something that you can pull off of the agenda for further review if something is funky.
Yeah.
I would be okay with that. Yeah.
So the recommendation is that board staff seek the clarification, and should there be anything that appears to be outside of board staff's comfort level with moving forward, that is reached out, and that this is individually reviewed at the full board meeting next week. Okay. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the lead on applicant number 18, Jessica Camacho. Will you please review this application?
Absolutely. So Ms. Camacho is coming to us with a response to a fair request that we had. We had requested clarification as to who provided her supervision at one site, because there were multiple supervisors listed, but depending on start dates of supervision, the supervisors may not have been eligible to supervise. The second response was for the supervisor to use the Board of Psychology form at the second location and submit that attestation so we had an accurate record. That form was submitted and looks to meet the requirements of the application. And then the explanation that was provided as far as who and how hours were provided was simply that the one supervisor, I believe it's Olivia, provided for the entire experience, but then she had some portions of her experience in which another supervisor was also in conjunction with, not in replacement to. I think that that's very common in what we see. She identified, a relatively small number of hours. Again, we were looking at small dates as well. So I am comfortable moving forward with recommending this application to the full board for approval.
We will go ahead and move back up to applicant number one. Applicant number one is Lindsay Balchia. I am the lead on this application. And Dr. Stenhoff, you're recused?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, so I will refresh the committee on this. This was a fair. And to just kind of review a little bit of where we stood at the last meeting, Ms. Balchia is a newly certified BCBA. She completed her coursework from the University of Arizona in December of 2022. She received her supervision all under licensed supervisors in the state of Arizona for a total of over 2,000 hours. And there were some concerns whenever we were going through this application, whenever we reviewed it last month. So we sent out that first additional request for information related to the DUI that was in place, that the applicant was found guilty of. The applicant did comply with all court required actions. They did plead not guilty, but was found guilty due to blood alcohol content being above the legal limit. There was also a termination that was reported on the application whenever this applicant was an RBT in August of 2020. That was due to accused billing fraud. We also had documentation to show that those hours that were billed that were not rendered were repaid to the company. And so there was some corrective action on the applicant's part. There was also related to that same situation, a BACB allegation of violation of the RBT ethics code related to 1.03, 1.04, 1.08, and 1.09. So those are being truthful and honest, conforming with legal and ethical codes, recognizing personal conflicts, and following through with obligations. The BACB did not provide disciplinary action, but did issue a notice of the complaint. The BACB delegated the responsibility of addressing potential violations to the supervising BCBA. So with all of this information reviewed, Ms. Balchia was not present at last month's meeting. It has been a couple of years since this situation, and it did not appear that there had been any recent concerns that had been presented. But I was also the lead on this last month, and ultimately, I'm a little bit concerned about the pattern of dishonesty and the lack of compliance with legal requirements of the profession. And so with that being said, I did ask in the fair if Ms. Balchia could be in attendance, as well as one of her supervisors, or more than one supervisor, but a supervisor who has overseen her and could potentially give insight to new patterns of behavior that might have emerged over time. So with that, we've got a couple of those people present today that I'd like to ask a couple of questions to. Dr. Davis-Wilson, I do see that you'd like to be acknowledged.
Yeah, I apologize. You move quicker than I get my little hand button up, but I do need to. I had made a disclosure last meeting that I do believe that that I knew Lindsay and that she was at one point for a portion of my class a student in one of my classes. Seeing her today, I can confirm she was a student in my class. Horrible with names, sorry about that. And it was for a portion of the class. I do not have any other interactions or any other correspondence with her since that time, and I am comfortable moving forward with being a part of this review.
And Dr. Rates, I'm so happy to see that you've joined us. I'm so happy. I've got so many things for you. Just so many things. Okay.
Well, glad to be here.
as we move forward with this, Ms. Bouchia, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Boucher, actually.
Oh, wow. I butchered that. Okay. So anyway, with that information, I appreciate your correction. You know, I'd kind of like to know about if you have turned kind of a new leaf, kind of what actions or steps you've taken to ensure that you would be providing those honest services and adhering to the ethics codes that are set forth by our National Certification Board?
Yes. Thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to be here and speak with you all today. I just want to say first and foremost, I have taken full accountability for all the matters that I've disclosed on my application. I've learned a lot, grown a lot over the past 3 years. I know now it is my professional duty to identify and also report any, you know, personal circumstances that may pose as a barrier to my work obligations as well as services to my clients and report those to a supervisor. In terms of actions that I've done to ensure honesty and accuracy with the services that I provide, I've actually completed training with my current organization regarding their own policies and procedures regarding billings and claims. I actually did that when I was an RBT still back in 2021. Moving forward from this, I'm able to reflect, of course, on the importance of accuracy in reporting of services and also making sure I'm completing and also maintaining proper necessary documentation for all services that I'm providing. Thank you.
And in terms of the DUI, what steps have you taken to ensure that is also addressed?
Of course, that I, you know, maintain my own legal obligations as a professional in this field. It was a mistake, you know, I did my due process, I complied with all of the proceedings of the court, and continuing to ensure that that would never happen again.
Do any other committee members have questions for the applicant before I move over to the supervisor? Dr. Davis-Wilson, I can't read your face right now. Okay. Sometimes it looks like a thinking face and you're going to speak. And so I just wanted to double check.
Definitely okay. Just thinking.
Okay. And it does look like one of your supervisors who oversaw your supervision experience over the past few years is present. Would you mind unmuting yourself?
No, there's two of us here, but I think you're referring to me.
I think I am, and I was going to let you introduce yourself and pronounce your name.
Yeah, my name is Jamila Amira, and I'm here to speak on behalf of Lindsay.
Okay, perfect. Would you mind just acting as an observer to kind of report a little bit on the behavior that you've seen of this applicant over the last few years?
Sure. Yeah. So I was the clinical director at the clinic that Lindsay applied to as a technician. So I think that was in November 2020 when she was hired. And from then on, I was the clinical director. She didn't report directly to me, but her RBT supervisor reported directly to me. And Lindsay, from the beginning of her time as a technician, was she showed her clinical skills. She was very dedicated to some of the more challenging cases. This was during COVID, and we were in clinic, then back home. And she really handled a lot of those shifts in kind of clinical direction without notice really well. The parents really valued the type of work that she provided to their son. And he was one of the kiddos, so unfortunately we had technicians ask off the case and things like that. And Lindsay went in the home and navigated a pretty tough situation. And then when we were back in clinic, navigated that really well. And I just want to add that, Lindsay, I mean, when it comes to RBT, clinical quality, I think something that's really important is also attendance, because even if you're the most stellar RBT, but you don't show up, like, that's really tough for your client. And that was never the case for Lindsay. I really wasn't aware that this was going on until she reported at the time that it was, she had to, that essentially there was really no, she didn't miss a beat as far as her behavior in the clinic. She really was committed to her clients and her work. There was never any indication based on her behavior that she was going through anything. I was always just very impressed with her, with her professionalism. What Lindsay did bring the information to myself and to her current RBT supervisor when she found out about the ethics violation complaint that was posed to the board. I discussed with her RBT supervisor at the time as the clinical director, then also went to my supervisor, who was our VP at the time. And naturally we filled out the paperwork that we had to, but in addition to that, we felt that there was no question on whether or not we would keep Lindsay employed with the organization because of her character and her clinical quality. We didn't feel that the documentation was really representative of who we had seen in front of us. So it was a little bit of a surprise to see her character kind of reflected in that manner in the documentation. And then I worked more closely with Lindsay. I think it was in November of 2022. She was a senior clinical resident, which is a position that is somebody who's either almost completed their master's or close to, or has close to completing that with a few more hours for their board certification licensure. And at that time, she did report directly to me until earlier this year when she became board certified. And I was able to observe Lindsay in a different capacity as a person leading family treatment guidance, as a person who is also completing assessments and writing treatment plans. And so I'd be happy to go into more detail about her timeliness and really not just her clinical quality, but also understanding the importance of strong administrative skills, in terms of reporting and her really adhering to any potential direction that she knew she had to follow, and knowing that she was kind of stepping into a role where there were new things to learn. She always took the initiative to bring those things to meetings with me. So I just want to say that it's been almost 3 years since I've known Lindsay, and in a different capacity, and just thought I would share that really I have no concerns as far as any that there would be a repeat of any ethical violations or any real impact, negative impact to our field. I think that she's a remarkable clinician, and I stand behind her character and her clinical quality.
I appreciate both of you being present today and being willing to answer questions that I had. I think that it does take a strong person to kind of turn around from some of these things that were brought up. Are there any other questions or things that we would like to hear from either of these attendees? Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I don't have any questions because they were answered for me by the supervisor. And so I just wanted to comment on, one, the appreciation of two supervisors being present to be able to speak to this, but also doing due diligence to make sure that they came prepared and were able to present to us kind of a picture of what they've been seeing in the last couple of years of supervision. That is greatly appreciated. So all of my questions were answered. So thank you very much for joining us.
You said supervisors, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Did I miss a supervisor?
I believe Jamie is also present.
Okay. Yes, I'm also here in support of Lindsay.
Okay. Is there anything that you would like to add or any differences that you observed in the applicant?
I will just add that I would second what Jamila has noted. My relationship with Lindsay began just about a year ago in closer capacity with working directly with her. As a licensed provider, with several cases that she is working on right now. In the time that we've been working together, I have had no concerns regarding her ethical or professional behavior, and don't foresee any issues in the future.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being present. Mm-hmm. I think that it does assist in providing a better picture of current behavior. Whenever we are looking back at things that have happened in the past, we don't typically like to just hold on to things forever and mistakes follow you for the rest of your life. If you have turned that new leaf and you are dedicated to the safety of the public who are receiving behavior analytics services in the state of Arizona, we need BCBAs. We need licensed behavior analysts. And I would feel comfortable at this point. And I'm anxious to hear from fellow committee members, but moving this forward for potential approval to the full board. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I just wanted to say to Lindsay, you've got yourself a pretty good gig now with some pretty, pretty strong supervisors that are willing to rally around and support you. There's a lot going on in our field. Some of that involves tossing around money. Some of that involves, you know, bonuses and all sorts of other things. As you navigate through this, keep in mind those that are vulnerable enough to take these chances with you and to work you through these opportunities. And that doesn't mean you stay with them forever, but I would encourage you to look at your options from a perspective of for the next couple of years, you're still a new provider, brand new BCBAs still need a lot of support. And it looks like you've got yourself a really good support system here. And I would encourage you to maintain that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again for all of your attendance today. And answering these questions, I really appreciate it. Okay, we will move on to the next applicant. And it's going to be, well, perhaps what we do is we come back to the applicants. We've got a few left here, but let's, if everyone is comfortable with it, move up to agenda item number. Let me get up here. I believe it's going to be agenda item number 4, but nope. Agenda item number 5. We actually have everyone here, so why don't we move to agenda item number 3 for a quick second here, because I wanted to wait until everyone was present to announce this. but I would like to take this opportunity to congratulate Dr. Donald Stenhoff for his appointment to the full board. Dr. Stenhoff has been previous chair of this committee. Dr. Stenhoff has been a mentor of mine. Dr. Stenhoff is a mentor to many in our field through his role at Arizona State University. He has always been one of the most ethical people that I have ever known in my entire life. With that being said, I could not think of a better appointment to the full board, and I would like to congratulate him and offer fellow committee members an opportunity to congratulate Dr. Sim. And I'm curious to see what Dr. Davey says, because it's always entertaining.
That's a lot of pressure. I will just say that, first off, I am extremely grateful for Dr. Diana Davis-Wilson's leadership, efforts, time, talents. The list goes on and on for everything that she has both personally and professionally put forth to the state of Arizona, the individuals that not only are served by behavior analysts, but also those that are served by psychologists and behavioral health professions and integrated professions across the state. She is someone who has been involved in this effort from the times of where we were not represented as behavior analysts with a committee or on the board. There were many a times where we sat across from the full board as guests to inform them on things. And today now we have come to a point where not only we have a committee because of her efforts and for her talents, but also she is a past chair of the full board of psychology, and has just really, quite honestly, created a path and a mechanism for behavior analysts, the profession of behavior analysis, to really flourish in this state and to provide the services that so many families and so many children and adults require to be able to be successful in our community. So I think I'd start there with that heartfelt thank you to Dr. Davis-Wilson. Dr. Stenhoff, instead of a thank you, I'll start with condolences. You will now be giving up more of your quote-unquote free time. Your family should expect to see less of you, which, you know, they may think that's okay. I'm not sure. We'll have to check on that later. You will now be a part of, not only this committee, but part of the full board. We look forward to seeing you there. I will welcome you as chair of the full board next Friday, I believe, officially. And we are happy to have you. You have big shoes to fill, I will just say, as you step in for Dr. Davis-Wilson. And so I know you'll do your best to do that. We'll get you up to speed in that position. But yes, we're happy to have you. Happy to have you will be the third behavior analyst to serve on the full board with Dr. Davis-Wilson and myself. And I can think of only a few others that have the talents and the capabilities and the ethics that you have that could serve in that role. So happy to have you alongside me. Thank you.
I don't know that you can follow that, but I would just echo everything to Diana. You've really led a path for all of us, and there isn't a way to say thank you enough for your time and your service. And Dr. Stenhoff, congrats. I think it's a wonderful addition to the board, and I too have enjoyed our time together as colleagues and can really think of no one better. So congratulations.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you, everybody, for your kind words. And I know I've said it before that that my mission here isn't complete. One, in that I have agreed to stay on the committee until I'll stay on a holdover on the committee. So while I'm stepping down from the board, I will still be a holdover on the committee until the appointment is filled. But then even after that, I do intend to fully continue in kind of this line of work and moving the regulatory process. I agree with my fellow colleagues. I know that Dr. Stenhoff is going to do a great job here. I think I also had the same thought of wishing condolences, but I'm the nerd that'll still continue to show up even when I'm not on. So if that means anything at all. No, I think, Dr. Senhoff, I'm excited for you for this because I have had both personally and professionally the opportunity to grow in ways I would have never imagined. I learned so much. I've challenged my own kind of personal perspectives on things. And I hope for you and kind of your journey that you get that same experience because it truly is priceless and it truly is an opportunity that that not everyone's going to get a chance to come by. I think you're going to do an amazing job and I appreciate all that you continue to do for the community and wish you the best of luck over the next couple of months navigating it. But once you get it, I think you'll get the hang of it and do great. Just don't speak to Dr. Meyer. Give that another 6 months or so before you start to have conversations with him.
I'll have to avoid him at the faculty meetings then. So, thank you for the kind words and Dr. Davey and Dr. Ritz, you both kind of mentioned this with, Dr. Davis Wilson and you're right. I've got some big shoes to fill. I'm looking forward to the opportunity. And the growth that comes from this. But also at the same time, I'm really glad that I get to continue working with this committee because, as you all know, I actually really enjoy the time working together with all of you and working through this process. So I really look forward to it and forward to the opportunity. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Ms. Malice, I promise I was not forgetting. I was about to ask you for a code word.
I'm sure the code word is monsoon. Monsoon. Thank you.
Monsoon. Okay. Now that we have wrapped up our general announcements, we will move down to the approval of minutes, which is agenda item number 4. I do believe we will need to go through these individually as there were some recusals and some lack of attendance on some of these. So we will move for agenda item number 4, approval of minutes for June 9th, 2023, regular session minutes. Is there a motion to approve these minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to note that I am recused from these minutes as well as the next June 9th minutes.
Same. I am also recused from June 9th regular and executive session minutes. So this motion to come from someone else.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the regular and executive session minutes for June 9th.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. There has been a motion to approve the regular and executive session minutes from June 9th made by Dr. Stenhoff. It has been seconded by Dr. Raitz. All in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. All opposed? Nay? Okay, the motion carries. We will move to the approval of minutes for the regular and executive session meeting minutes from June 30th of 2023. Is there a motion to approve these minutes? Dr. Senhoff?
Madam Chair, I need to state that I'm recused due to absence from both the regular and executive session minutes.
Okay. I'll make a motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
Just to clarify, that motion is to approve both minutes. So moved.
Okay. There has been a motion made to approve the minutes from June 30th, 2023, both the regular and executive session minutes by Dr. Raitz. It has been seconded by Dr. Davis Wilson. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion carries. All right, let's move down to agenda item number 5. Agenda item number 5 is consideration and possible action. Oh, hold on. Here we go. is consideration and possible action regarding complaint number T23-04 against Chelsea Moore, and the recommendation to the board and possible referral for additional investigation relating to Ms. Moore's then employer, Centria. With this agenda item number, please note that a person or a representative of a person who has filed or is subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and will not be permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials of children or patients and the complainant. Please be aware the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. The committee may go into executive session to discuss the confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Jane Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda based upon parties present and request to speak. You've all observed that today. We've modified the order of the agenda. With all of this disclaimer being offered, Dr. Davey, you're the lead on this case. Listed as 5A, will you please provide a summary of the case for the committee?
I will, Madam Chair, and I think I'll first start off by thanking Ms. Moore for being present today and being here to be able to answer our questions around this. Today, if committee members will remember that we had opened a complaint based on our own recommendations regarding concerns that Ms. Moore had practiced in the state of Arizona without a license to do so. We have gone through a lot of this information previously. It dates the information that's provided in your packet, walks you through Ms. Moore's beginning here as a with her employer in one position and kind of moving her way through through the ranks, if you will, to the point of where she was a lead behavior analyst for the organization that she was employed for at that time. When she moved into the latter position, she advised her employer that licensure was going to be necessary in the state of Arizona if she was going to be working there. And as such, came forward for that licensure. It was during that licensure review that we noted, she came forward for the licensure at that point. And that she would have to, until such time, be under the supervision of a licensed behavior analyst. Mrs. Moore practiced behavior analysis in Arizona probably about 5 months from December of 2021 through April-ish of 2022 without a license. We've looked at this issue in a couple of different cases throughout, and so this is something that we've seen a little bit more of over the course of the last few months. We also, in the response to the complaint that came from Mrs. Moore, she acknowledges kind of the time frame of which she moved through her employment and working from New Mexico, and then as she accepted a position into Arizona, her actions. She understands that she did not have a license at that time and acknowledges that that was an error, as we have heard in other committee meetings. Really today, the discussion that we're focused on is around, how this came to be, how we have moved to a situation where we have behavior analysts that are put in positions of where they are supervising activities in a state for which they are not licensed. And so I think we can pause there and start there and pause for just a second for any other committee members' questions or comments.
Do any committee members have questions for Dr. Davey? There is no complainant for this case, so we will move to the respondent. Ms. Moore, are you present, and do you wish to make a statement to the committee?
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Sarah Stark, and I'm counsel for Ms. Moore, and Ms. Moore is also present and can go ahead and introduce herself for the record.
Hi, yes, I am Ms. Moore. I am here, and I'm present.
This is your opportunity to make a brief statement, up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following your statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, committee members. Ms. Moore and I are here to observe the proceedings, but Ms. Moore will not be answering any questions about this matter at this time. Ms. Moore has answered questions at two prior proceedings and has provided written responses about her recollection of the facts surrounding the situation. She's been extremely cooperative and willing to participate in the process, and we did submit a recent narrative response in February of this year. However, we have been subsequently informed that we are unable to access the investigative report for this case. So without having additional documentation to review, there is nothing more we can add to the investigation at this time. Ms. Moore has previously stated that she does not have access to any of the company's documents and she no longer works there. So without any of these additional materials, we're really unable to expand on or clarify any of the statements that Ms. Moore has previously made. It is clear from Ms. Moore's prior statements to the committee and the full board, as well as her written responses, that there was some confusion and misunderstanding on her part about the situation, and to attempt to speculate when we have not been given access to any of the documents pertinent to this case would not be in Ms. Moore's best interest, considering the remedies the committee and board have for unlicensed individuals at this point. I will just reiterate that Ms. Moore no longer works for this company. She does not practice here in Arizona, and she has gained a lot of insight and knowledge from this experience that will assist her as she continues her practice. So with that being said, I will turn it back over to you, Madam Chair, for the committee's discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stark. Do any committee members have questions for Ms. Stark? Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I have no questions. So if anybody else has any questions, we can start there. I have thoughts, but no questions.
Yeah. Madam Chair, just a point of clarification. I believe Ms. Stark said she wouldn't answer any questions. Is that your stance, Ms. Stark, that you will not take questions from us?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So comments it is.
Yeah, I thought maybe if anybody had any points of clarification questions for Ms. Stark, I appreciate Ms. Moore being here once again and embarking on this journey with us. I'm in reviewing everything, I do think that Ms. Moore has been more than forthcoming with this information. I think at this point she's not licensed in Arizona, and so the issue, she was licensed at the time, but because she's not licensed at this time, I guess my concern would be that at best a cease and desist would be the only thing. And we already have plenty of attestation and documentation that, one, she's not practicing here, and two, she doesn't intend to practice here. And three, if she were to practice here, she has learned that she must be licensed. And so those would be, in my opinion, the things that we would be seeking a cease and desist over. Taking that then to kind of the other part of it, I'm very concerned about the responses of this organization, the lack of providing of supervision. Clearly, there was a BCBA who either signed off on the billing or allowed the billing to occur under their number, because you cannot bill without the information of the other BCBA. And so my concerns largely lie with the organization itself. For that reason, I am going to make a motion that we go into executive executive session for the purpose of legal advice.
I will second that. The motion has been made to go into executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice by Dr. Davis Wilson. It has been seconded by me. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Nay. The motion carries.
And Madam Chair, please allow us a couple of moments to get this set up.
Thank you. We are now back in open session. Is there any further discussion related to the complaint, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding T23-04, specifically right now in relation to Chelsea Moore and the unlicensed practice?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we take no action. I think that Ms. Moore has, again, demonstrated to us her full involvement and vulnerability and commitment to making sure that that period of time is rectified in the future. I think for that period of time, we have evidence and reason to believe that perhaps her employer may have misled her. And while I do recognize that that's still the responsibility of the certificate, when you live in a non-licensure state, and we've kind of taken these stances before, you live in a non-licensure state and you move to a licensure state or you practice in one, yes, it is your responsibility, but there's also complexities around that. And I think that even the employment documentation support that that she were to be supervised appropriately. And so I think that this wasn't something that she did for a long period of time, several years. I think it was a short period of time as she started to notice all of the inconsistencies. She decided to change paths away from the organization. And I don't know that that any further action would be warranted or would be necessary at this point.
Is there a second?
Just to clarify, that would be your motion, Dr. Davis Wilson, as a recommendation to the board to dismiss the complaint?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Yes, or to take no action, dismiss the complaint.
Is there a second? Are you talking, Dr. Davis?
I will second, but I don't want to rush to the conclusion of this, as there's some things that will have to happen, I think, as part of the discussion.
Okay. All right. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I agree. Ms. Galvin, do you want us to vote on this and then discuss the other concerns, or would you like us to do that in discussion now? And I just want to make sure that we're separating the two matters, because Ms. Moore.
I would agree that separation of the matters is important, and I would recommend that you adjudicate and vote on this motion. And then if you have any subsequent concerns or discussion that you want to take place, you can do it at that time.
Then I have no discussion.
Fair enough.
Does your second stand, Dr. Davy?
Yes, with your clarification, my second stands.
Dr. Stenhoff, you unmuted. Does that mean you would like to speak?
No, I'm just waiting for the vote. as in preparation for voting.
As part of this discussion, I may appear to be the stickler here. But I'm not sure that I agree. Looking at this, I do understand the position that the respondent is in. But like you were mentioning, Dr. Davis Wilson, I do believe it is the responsibility of those who come to practice here. I'm certainly not saying that we should engage in disciplinary action against someone who is not licensed, but I am not certain that it is not a better idea to recommend a cease and desist. I acknowledge that there is not continued practice at this point in time. However, noting that unlicensed practice did occur in the National Practitioner Database, I'm not certain that that is not a prudent action given the facts that have been presented. Would anybody like to, am I alone in this opinion?
Madam Chair, I too am also leaning towards your recommendation. I agree that I think there were a lot of variables that led to this situation, but we did see the unlicensed practice, and I do lean towards your recommendation of a cease and desist.
Dr. Davey?
Madam Chair, I completely understand the discussion, and I understand the position that several committee members have expressed. I would say the reason that, just as a point of clarification on my end, is that, you know, in Ms. Moore's response to us, the indication is that she understood what licensure pieces needed to be in place and sought verification from her employer that she'd be able to supervise and could bill under that supervision with someone attached to her. And that was, you know, that is in her written response to us, and that's provided page 16 and 17 of the PDF. And so in terms of her practicing during that time, like, there's no question that occurred. I think the part that I struggle with in terms of moving towards a cease and desist is that that the response leads us to the belief that she had done her diligence in that, and that it only came to light after the fact, and that she was not remiss in understanding what needed to happen. In fact, you know, this appears that the information that was provided by her organization was less than factual. And so that's why I struggle with the action versus no action on our part. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Davis Wilson?
And Madam Chair, if I may, we actually don't have proof that she was not supervised. She has attested to not being aware of supervision, but the supervision standards for clinical practice at this level is not defined. It's not like the same, 10% and 2000, it's not defined. It's defined based on the needs of the case and the client. And that in some cases can go all the way to monitoring reports, reviewing data collection. And while I do think face-to-face meetings would be a standard of care, she has no access to those records and they're refusing to provide them. And so I would even argue that while she vulnerably made a statement to us that could lead us to believe perhaps supervision wasn't occurring, I think by making that statement, may even be telling us what she would be expecting of supervision if she were to see supervision. But whether or not supervision occurred is still the mystery, because we can't get a hold of any of the documentation. And that's why I think that it would be concerning, because if
if this goes in other discussions and what have you or had, and other entities say, no, supervision was provided to these standards, well, now we've taken action on something that we have no proof whether supervision was or was not. I think her attestation of, hey, I don't believe I was being supervised, may just be telling to what quality of supervision she has as her understanding of supervision, and not necessarily whether or not supervision occurred. And I'm going to just go ahead and call the question on the current motion that's present.
To be clear, the motion is it would be a recommendation to the board to dismiss the complaint and take no action. It was seconded. Could I have a roll call, please?
All in favor, say aye.
I think a roll call would be appropriate.
Oh, a roll call. Okay.
I'll go ahead and take care of that. Ms. Denton?
Like, I'm sorry, let me understand what's happening. Am I present or am I voting?
It's a roll call vote for the motion to recommend to dismiss the complaint. So
okay. I'm voting nay.
Dr. Senhoff?
Yay.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Reitz?
Nay.
Three yeses, two noes, motion carries.
Okay. We will now move to the second part of this agenda item here. You know, it should be noted that Centria has declined board staff invitation to appear today. Is there any discussion regarding the possible referral for additional investigation regarding Ms. Moore's then employer, Centria? Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that this may be a reflection of practices. We have information in the record and through attestation stating that, hey, like this is a common thing in there. So I just assumed it was okay because everybody else in the company in Arizona is doing it that way. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned that there are BCBAs out there that either don't realize that it's their responsibility that the billing and the license they're practicing under is their responsibility. I'm concerned that we may see more of this. And my biggest concern is that there seems to be a big disconnect between policies and outcomes for members, because these are all things that should be in place to protect the public. And we have vast amounts of both literature and standards of care to say, hey, these things need to be in place. We also have a statute that says you must be licensed or adequately supervised by someone who is licensed in order to provide these services. And so for me, I mean, I would like to see a referral at a minimum to the AG's office. I would like to see a referral to Access, because Access is the one that monitors the mid-tier program. So I think an investigation there, could yield, some supports. I think any accreditation body, believe they're still listed as accredited with JCO and with BHCOE. I think that even if those are an error, those entities should be aware that they're being represented to the public as being accredited. I'm not as familiar with the JCO standards as I am with BHCOE, but I think, you know, with BHCOE, a referral for a possible violation of AO2, which is conforming to the legal rights of the state as an organization, and D14 is ensuring that all of your individuals providing services are properly licensed within the state, would be two that I would bring to the attention of BHCOE. I am not sure if they are licensed by DHS.
in theory, they probably should be. But I think DHS licensing may also have interest. I would be satisfied with just access the AG's office and the accreditation bodies.
Before we move forward with additional discussion, Ms. Malice, will you also offer the second code word?
Yes, I apologize for that delay. The second code word is Haboob. Haboob. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there further discussion?
Yes.
Dr. Davey.
I am very uncomfortable with the information and the lack of response to our request for information from an organization that is here in the state, employing a significant number of licensed behavior analysts at various levels, from leadership down to direct service, as well as RBTs. And I would have appreciated, I believe, a statement and some clarification around their commitment to what is expected to operate in the state versus what we have today. I am also, as we talked about the agencies, I also see that, you know, in the packet that we have, that there are individuals that are licensed in the state of Arizona that appear on different forms throughout throughout this. And I think before I let this go, I one more time would like to go to executive counsel for legal advice.
I will second that. The motion has been made by Dr. Davey to go to executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice. It was seconded by me. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion carries. Back to open session. We are back in open session, and I believe there may be further discussion related to possible referral for additional investigation regarding Ms. Moore's then employer, Sentry. Their discussion by the committee.
Madam Chair, just would like to continue with the idea of individuals that we, agencies that we would want to alert to the situation. I think Dr. Davis Wilson already mentioned access. You know, we also have that 5-month period of time where Ms. Moore is practicing without a license. And so services where she would have been involved and billed for, those would not have been correctly billed for, most likely, or they were billed in some other fashion whether it's an MCO, under access, whether that's someone like Arizona Complete Health or Mercy Care or Mercy Plan, and the other MCOs, as well as any of the other commercial insurance carriers that might have had members being served through Centria and Ms. Moore's team. And so with that, I would think that maybe we would look at alerting I'm trying to think of the name of it. There's an organization that essentially is all of the health plans here in the state of Arizona where they're members. And so maybe alerting them versus trying to alert every single funder, you know, individually. We don't know who the organization has contracts with or who Ms. Moore was credentialed with. So maybe allowing the State Association of Insurance Providers to this issue.
Yeah. Ms. Pakenham?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question, I think, is best directed to Ms. Galvin. So
So what I recall from some work that I did previously, that when similar instances were presented to was a different regulatory board, the referral that I think Dr. Davey is describing, it was made to the Arizona Department of Insurance. So, Ms. Galvin, is that an appropriate recipient of, you know, information that may, that they can evaluate for purposes of, you know, determining whether to open an investigation?
That would be yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I would just like to add, like, I do agree that the Department of Insurance oversees kind of the whole bigger umbrella that they can go to, but also just making sure Access, as its own state kind of regulatory system, has or is included in that as well. Especially since we're talking about mid-tier supervision, and that is something directly under their rules.
Yeah.
Or policy manual.
And so, Dr. Davis-Wilson, would you suggest that then we would not only bring it to Access, but we know who the MCOs are in the state? Would we just also refer that information directly to them?
I mean, I would imagine that Access would already route it to them. Because they're subcontractors of Access. So Access's investigation would already include their subcontractors.
So you would say that we would want, I mean, you're comfortable assuming that'll happen versus us making the referral directly or in concert?
Not necessarily, but we also, unless we have some other proof, we also don't know which of the seven MCOs they're in network with. And so I think that would be information that Access would have as far as current contract statuses. Mm-hmm. And then Access would be able to pull the billing on the back end themselves on all of the things, and then delegate that out in ways that we wouldn't necessarily have that information otherwise.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Maybe in our referral, that we just, you know, we let Access know that we're not privy to which MCOs this might affect, but we trust that they will do their diligence moving forward. I understand that. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing no further questions or discussion, we need to determine if a motion is necessary.
If there are going to be any referrals, I would prefer a motion that this recommendation be made to the board.
So moved.
I apologize, but I need something more specific.
That's fine. I will do it. Yep. So this is Brian. I'll make the motion that the agencies that Dr. Davis-Wilson and myself has listed, and we can have board staff reiterate those, that we make the recommendation to the full board that those agencies or bodies be informed of the information that this committee and the full board are in possession of.
For the record, could I have a list of those agencies to whom you are making a recommendation that the board make a referral?
Was that from Heidi or from?
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, what I heard was the Attorney General's Office, Arizona Attorney General's Office, I assume, their fraud investigation unit or division. I heard the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, and I also heard the Arizona Department of Insurance. Did I miss anything?
And I heard two others.
Crediting bodies, such as the
BHDOE and Managed Care Organization. And if there's any others, please specify now so we staff ensures we're not missing any others.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Dr.
Davis-Wilson, you also said joint commission. I believe you said that was one of your other thoughts.
Yeah, the Joint Commission, I think, is their other listed accredited body. And then, again, in theory, they should also be licensed by the Department of Health Services, which also in their rules and statutes define supervision in their OTC licensing. So if they are licensed there, then I think they should be aware that perhaps they're not providing adequate supervision by a BHP.
And we do need a second. I didn't catch a second.
I will second.
Is there any further discussion?
And let's do a roll call if we can, please.
Okay. We will now take a vote.
Ms. Stenton?
Aye.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Aye.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Rates?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you to everyone who was here today as a part of this discussion. These recommendations will be made to the full board and will be discussed at the full board's next meeting next week. At this point, does anyone have any objections to having a 10-minute comfort break?
Just for clarification, so there's no confusion, staff, is it a certainty that those recommendations will be on the board's agenda next week, given the amount of material?
Yes, both recommendations I expect are on the August 4th agenda.
Okay. Comfort break. We'll resume at 12:20.
Yes.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, are you all back?
I am present.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, we've had a request to do, instead of just next, before the next complaint, that we just quickly go to the BACB update.
Okay.
Which is my agenda item. So if you're ready, then I will start.
Okay, that sounds fine. Let's see, that is agenda item number 7, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. Will you please provide a summary of this matter, Ms. Pekkanen?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. So the BACB issued two regulators, jurisdictions that regulate behavior analysts very recently, just another update to a previously issued communique on the subject of ethics. This is something that, this topic is something that the BACB has elected to develop some additional content and, you know, to focus attention to the ethics sources that address RBTs. So there are just some citations to a newsletter that if anyone's interested, there's additional reading on that topic. And then the other update relates to a request that the BACB made of the regulatory jurisdictions relative to any requirements that may be established for DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusiveness coursework or training that jurisdictions may require. They were interested in do any jurisdictions require coursework specific to DEI for initial licensure, for continuing education, or training requirements beyond either of those two. And of course, our answer for Arizona was no. And basically what I'm seeing is that's pretty consistent, you know, across the jurisdictions. They did issue sort of a summary of their findings, which I'll have to provide to you. But I think it's only a partial summary. So once they have a more
complete survey of the jurisdictions that may be at least somewhat informative to this committee. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to address them, even specific to this the board's previous attempts to designate a prescribed amount of continuing education requirements to this topic. If you'd like for me to revisit that history a little bit, I'm prepared to.
Are there any questions for Ms. Packenham?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Packenham. All right. We've got everyone back, so we are going to move to agenda item number 5B. Agenda item number 5B is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the complaint number 23-48 against Zachary Reneke and the recommendation to the board. Dr. Davis-Wilson, will you please provide a summary of the case 5B23-48 concerning Zachary Reneke for the committee?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So this complaint is coming from an RBT who formerly worked at the organization in which Mr. Reneke is a behavior analyst. The RBT came forward with the complaint, expressing concerns that the case that she was working on was a complex case and lacked supervision and oversight. And she felt she was not properly supervised to be able to provide services to the individual. She subsequently shared additional information related to other parties who were aware of the concerns that she had. She also provided board staff with kind of an overview of those concerns. Board staff did request a response from the licensee. Licensee provided a response in a timely fashion. And the licensee's employer did provide the employment records for complaint to AG, as well as a portion of, so a partial record for the client that is being requested, or the client that was being reviewed. I did note that the file, while it did include a physical therapy evaluation, all other evaluations and anything related to co-treatment was not documented. The client record in its entirety was requested by board staff. However, the record was void of any diagnostic evaluations, relevant medical records, or insurance information, such as the cards or the coverage details. The employee record was rather vague itself. It also was missing training, any competency demonstration, supervision, or ongoing performance monitoring. There was some information provided relevant to the resignation that complaint AG had provided, and that was all that was provided. Mr. Reneke does, in his, I think his letter, identify that he was responsible for ensuring that AG received the proper dosage of RBT supervision, and outlined from his perspective how he felt the needs of both AG supervision as well as the case were met through his services. So that concludes my summary. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Do any committee members have questions for Dr. Davis-Wilson? Is the complainant AG present?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You can keep yourself unmuted there and state your initials only for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement, up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following your statement.
Thank you for that. AK, I am present. My initials changed. I changed my last name recently. To begin the 5 minutes, I would like to begin that rather, it was, this case was specifically difficult with this kiddo, just because he was so aggressive. And if I didn't have previous training and knowledge about how, you know, to deal with these types of kiddos, this would have been a very difficult case. With that given, I felt like it was just me against the world with this kiddo, who previously, with a previous RBT, would grab an 8-inch knife and chase him around the house. And this was an in-home client, and he was about 8 years old. The aggression was towards family members that were present during this time, as well as animals. This was the first time I was there. I just I was not with the BCBA. The BCBA did not come into any of into home and supervise me for quite some time, actually, until after that. I was supervised a whole 2 times during the 8-month period, which he very much knew how difficult this kiddo was. I may be mistaken, I may have been supervised 3 times in that 8-month period, in which that 8-month period, I was able to get this client able to, we were backwards chaining the, like, even just toothbrushing, and he could do forward chaining completely independent without any behaviors for quite some time. There was at least 6 months that he was actually able to do this forward chaining independently, and it was still not changed in any way, shape, or form. I did submit documents for at least, I believe, 3 months, if not 6 months, of how many times that I would, you know, put in my documentation and data for this client for each session that I had, Monday through Thursday. And it was 100%. There was no change in these goals. The goals needed to be changed completely for a lot of different targets that we were going for. It was hard to get him to sit down and focus in the beginning. And I had him being able to sit down and focus, even midway through the treatment that I implemented for that 8 months. He was difficult before for me. He was not. Me and him were definitely, we paired well together, and he was great for me, but it was just very difficult for the in-home, and they had to stop services after that 8 months, just because it wasn't, he was unable to stop those aggressions toward family members. But he did do an increase in all of these behaviors, and the targets were never changed. I would meet with my BCBA for this and try to get him to change one or two things of the targets and try to get information. And I was just led with, I was met with, anyway, I'll do it, and never really doing it, never changing the goals, really. I did try to email and try to text him and try to, you know, just try to get him involved and see what the progress was with this particular client, and it never came into fruition, pretty much. I think I was slipped through the cracks. I think this client was slipped through the cracks, and it felt like I was in an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. You know, I was with this client that was difficult to begin with, but not with me.
later through the treatment. And I tried to get him into the center so we can be with him a little bit more. And it was just not met with positivity with the owners or the BCBA. And it felt like the BCBA was not on the side of trying to get this kiddo to be generalized with all of these targets. It felt like he didn't really, it didn't matter to him pretty much, just to see this child or this client, to change in most of it. For the 8 months, it was very difficult, to have, you know, I was doing things that weren't on the target list, for quite some time, and it was just difficult. I did have this client Wednesday and Thursday on most days, but, after summer hit, I had him Monday through Thursday for upwards of 3 hours each. And the amount of time that I spent with this client, did not reflect any amount of the 5% or even less than that. It was not even 1% of how much I was supervised, helped, given advice to, or it just kind of, I would say, supported on this.
I definitely appreciate your input. We're at a little over 5 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and allow an opportunity for committee members to ask you any questions that they may have. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I have a few. My first one is going to be specific to kind of just your resignation. What was your reason for resigning from this organization?
To be honest, it was the drive time that I had to go to the clients in home that I wasn't getting paid for over an hour or two and from for the most part, and the pay. Also, it was just everybody. It seems like everybody was leaving for the same exact reasons of not only pay, but also with the concerns that they had for them possibly losing their license as a BCBA, just because the efficacy of Team for Kids and this person being as the director of ABA. And it just never really lined up for a lot of other people. So there was ethics involved. There was pay involved. There was the drive time involved. There was, you know, there was a lot of involvement of those three things, but mostly it was the ethics. It was hard to see all these kiddos not being supported and these RBTs not being supported.
Thank you. My next question is going to be related to time then. It looks like these concerns were over and per the complaint were kind of across a year. We do have some documentation, but can you give us kind of an overview of what attempts you made to resolve your concerns for the lack of supervision?
I did bring it up to the owner. The owners, both of them, I met with all three of them actually, and this was after the fact that I had not been supervised much at all, and the BCBA had actually changed. They tried to write me up because I positively shouted out on our chat the different BCBA. I just said, you know, like, finally, thank you very much for helping. And they took it negatively and they would try to write me up. So I told them exactly why I was going, what was going on and how much I was attempting to try to get the BCBA, the previous BCBA, to help me out and to get the targets and to supervise and to help me. And they
they did not write me up. They met with the BCBA, and it just seemed like they were trying to push it off. So the third time that I met with the owners without the BCBA, because this is frequent that the BCBA would say that he would be there and he was not. The third time he asked me if I was going to go to the board, and there was no other person. There was no HR. There was no other person in the room. And he said, well, if you do, then if anybody files against us, that person will be filed against and dropped as an RBT. So I took that as a threat. So that is exactly why I have not brought this to anybody's attention before I resigned.
Thank you. You mentioned that, and I want to just be respectful of other people who are aware but possibly not involved. So I'm going to use initials. There was another program director with the initials RM that you mentioned had knowledge of the situation. Can you kind of speak to what kind of response, if any, or steps that individual did to kind of help you resolve these concerns?
Well, towards the end of the 8 months, he actually came in home and was able to meet with other RBTs that were coming on the case before the client was stopped services. So he did meet with the client in home, and he actually was stabbed by a pencil. And before that time that he actually met in home, he was trying to get RK ZR, to be able to step up and do these things. And he would remind him to keep, you know, like to meet with me and to be able to go and in home with me. But it was never came to fruition for ZR to come inside and to watch what was actually going on in home.
Thank you. I have one last question for you. And again, I'm going to ask that you not say any names at this time, just because I know a lot of things, you know, happen in these situations and these people aren't necessarily involved at this moment. But you do mention that, and you mentioned it in kind of your opening statement, that there were multiple other employees kind of leaving the organization under these same concerns. They were aware of your concerns. There was kind of a mutual understanding of this. Do you have any knowledge as to perhaps why these individuals have not come forth? So obviously as an RBT, you come forth with these concerns as part of your obligation. But there's quite a few who had similar concerns. Do you happen to kind of, or can you opine on kind of your understanding of why you're the first to come forward with these concerns?
Excuse me. Yes, absolutely. Fear of retaliation against or from the owners specifically. BH is one of these people that were. Not only I feel threatened by specifically because of if I went to the board, I was threatened that way, but also they didn't want to burn bridges for this specific place of employment. They were scared that they would be retaliated on from the owner specifically and or BH. And they didn't want the headache. It just seems like they were just kind of putting, they were more afraid, I would say, that there would be retaliation and there would be a headache of just following through with all these steps that I took. And they're more than willing to back me up as well with what my allegations are that I presented.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Are there any further questions for the complainant, AK? Dr. Davey?
Thank you. And thank you for being here today and making sure you're here to answer some questions around the complaint that you filed. We appreciate that as it helps us get a better understanding of your concerns and then possible remedies going forward. I have a couple of questions with regard to your RBT supervision while at this agency and while under the licensee. During that time, there's obviously documentation requirements for the supervisor, and there's some requirements that are also tied to the RBT. During the times where you were supervised or where there was a lack of supervision, do you also have documentation around that?
No, I do not. That is documentation that I do not have access to.
Understood. And then I think my other question would be around, obviously to maintain requirements under BACB guidelines, you do need to hit that 5% threshold, right? So during this period of time where there are, let's just say, supervision is not going on in an appropriate fashion, are you able to still maintain that 5% through other supervisors, or what is that looking like for you in terms of practice?
I was actually HB. I'm just going to put initials to her. She actually picked up the slack that ZR was not able to do on other clients that I had under her BCBA. So I was able to get more than 5%. Our target was 10% specifically, and I did hit the 10% to keep my license through you guys. So yes, I was able to be supervised for those specific hours, but not with this client specifically.
Okay.
That so, I needed it more for.
Yeah. And so, and that's, I think that's, I just wanted to tease that apart. Like I wanted to understand, like, I understand like that you needed specific needs for this particular client who sounds like they were difficult and had some challenges that you would need assistance as an RBT. And then I just wanted to understand that you were still getting the supervision that was needed for you to continue with your RBT status per the BACB. I appreciate that, and then thank you for that clarification. And I think I'll stop there and see if others have questions.
Are there any other questions that committee members have for the complainant AK?
And I guess, can I ask one more? With regard, so I don't, and if we have to, we can obviously go, if it's, well, I guess I'll stop there. I think my question around like the retaliation and the feeling kind of trapped in the position, that you were in, I wonder if you can elaborate on that, because I think many of us, here on the board, or on the committee, are engaged with agencies that are constantly looking for excellent RBTs. And so can you give me a little bit of understanding of why you felt trapped at this particular agency?
Well, before leaving, the entrapment I felt was because the retaliation that the owner, BH, specifically told me. And if I did go to the board, he said, any RBT that goes to the board will be filed against, and they will be fired. And at the time, I was not in a position where I could find a different place of employment. So I waited, and there was a couple of medical procedures that I needed to do on myself. And with the FMLA, that's what I did qualify for. So at that time, I did not retaliate or not retaliated, I'm sorry, I was not retaliated on, thank goodness, but also I was in fear of losing this employment for that specific. And I'm trying to find the words. Sorry, Dr. Davey. I wasn't the only one that was scared of losing my employment. There's a lot of other people that saw exactly what was going on with this specific BCBA that was the director. And there was other clients that in other locations of this employment that had the exact same things happening to them. And it was, they were just afraid. So I hope I answered that question for you. I'm not really quite sure.
No, I appreciate it. I think my comments would just be for those that are listening or other RBTs that are in your situation, and BCBAs for the same. Like, you should never feel that that's the way that you're trapped. And I appreciate the fact that you may have some personal things going on that didn't allow you to exit in a timely fashion. But, there are not retaliations by the board or by certifying bodies for individuals that are leaving organizations due to ethical concerns. And so, just something as part of your learning process through this, I would just point out to you and to others, just so you're aware that there are backstops in place to be able to protect individuals. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Davis-Wilson.
Yeah, just real quick, I want to just piggyback on Dr. Davey, and I do encourage, and again, this goes back to our frequent conversations of especially licensed professionals. So RBTs are certified by the BACB, but not licensed by this board, but licensed professionals, being able to come forth, there is, kind of a level of immunity for bringing forth these things. I think there's an entire statute on it. And if they were familiar with the statutes, they would know that. So I just wanted to piggyback on what Dr. Davey's saying, is that one, no, nobody should ever feel like they're in that position. I do agree. There are a lot of contingencies that do keep someone in that position. But specifically speaking to like the licensed staff, we most definitely still, need them to understand that there is those protections, as Dr. Davey said.
Any further questions? All right. Mr. Reneke, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Sorry, it's Reneke.
Reneke. All right. You can go ahead and keep yourself unmuted. State your full name for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement, up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following your statement.
Yeah, my name is Zachary Reineke. I've been licensed since December or January of 2018 or 2019. I forget what the exact conferral or whatever date that was. And I passed my BCBA certification exam in August of 2018, so nearly 5 years now. As the complainant kind of indicated, providing some background information for this case. This was a very complex case for a variety of reasons. I think that at the time, COVID was a significant component of interferer, I guess, of the ability to provide some treatment to the individual. This client, KB, had pretty significant psychological and trauma from previous life experience. And throughout the entirety of my supervision of this client, I worked with his guardian or caregiver at the time to get access to psychological exams and things so that he could be medically cleared, I guess, in this sense, for behavior analysis to be the most effective for him. As AK indicated, there was a significant amount of reactivity that this client would engage in with others, siblings, grandparents, caregivers, things like that. And part of my goal for this individual was to provide opportunities for contingencies for reinforcement so that the rates and the frequency of the behaviors that he did engage in could be reduced via functional communication training and things like that, that he showed prerequisite skills for, but were not contacted, I guess, or were not being displayed despite those prerequisite skills. In my letter, I indicated, or my response to the complainant, I indicated the rates of supervision that were provided, which differ from the complainant's. And as well, I also discussed within that the individual sessions that I would engage in within the clinic environment from approximately March of 2022 through May of 2022, which guided my decision making in a sense to limit or reduce significant changes because of that reactivity to his programming. In addition to those one-to-one meetings, I also engaged with the caregivers through like CFT meetings and things through the Department of DDD, as well as Child Protective Services. And I think that's about all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Reinke. Do any community members have questions for Mr. Reinke? Dr. Stenhoff?
Yeah, Mr. Reinke, the complaint in case suggested that this was a difficult client and requested additional support. Do you agree that was the case? There was a request for more help?
I can agree to some extent that that was the case. Yes, I would contend within the complaint itself, the written complaint that was provided to me, that there are some errors within that in terms of rate and things like that. But yes, I would say that, you know, I would agree with her in that sense.
Okay. And then follow-up question, how were these requests addressed by you or other BCBAs employed at the agency who are overseeing not only AK, but the client?
I'd first like to indicate that for up until approximately May, the client received a very low rate of service from our organization. So approximately 5 hours a week, 4 hours a week approximately, through until May, in which there was an increase because of his availability with school. So in that sense, I was nearing the minimum requirement for RBT. I met the minimum requirement in my perspective through the BACB. And as well as I indicated with my own direct implementation and sessions that I had with him as a means of, you know, working on generalization and decreasing the rates of behavior that he would see in the clinic prior to hopefully his integration, you know, over time, which ultimately never occurred because of various factors that were outside of our control. If that answers your question.
Well, I appreciate that you've met the minimum requirements of supervision. However, AK suggested, and it sounds like according to the records and by what you've said, is that this client was a more difficult client. You met the basic or the baseline of supervision towards an RBT, how were the additional requests addressed by you or the supervising BCBAs at your agency for this particular client that may have exceeded by necessity the level of supervision that's being provided?
I did engage in multiple meetings with the RBT. I supported her in the form of providing CPI, crisis prevention intervention training, for which I am an instructor. So in those forms, I guess, I were the ways that I buoyed my own supervision with other means of support to her.
Was there prohibiting circumstances that would have prevented you from addressing the problems? I mean, AK alluded to, I believe, a knife and being chased through the house. I think that's a fairly serious circumstance, you know, and has the possibility of resulting in injury, significant injury. Is there anything prohibitive that may have minimized or kept you from, or other BCBAs, and from attending or coming to the site and helping out directly above and beyond the minimum requirements of RBT's supervision?
With regards to the previous RBT that is alleged in this complaint, I did much higher rates of supervision for that individual as a result, partially because of those instances with the aggression. With that RBT, they had even fewer hours, approximately 3 hours a week of services within that time period. And when I was made aware as the supervising BCBA of those instances, I did increase my own supervision with them to contact those instances and provide further training for that RBT as well as the other caregivers within the session or within the home environment.
And so with that RBT, what about with AK? With the request of additional assistance, did the amount of hours or the number of hours increase to help alleviate or at least help assist her navigating the treatment for the client?
I guess ultimately, no. The behaviors that I would observe and the behaviors that were indicated within the data, I guess, as AK has alleged, were pretty low during those supervision sessions. So You know, when I would do one-to-one sessions and review treatment data and things like that, there was no indication that the responses that the individual, the client, would engage in were as severe as the RVT was indicating, I guess.
Yeah. And when you say the RVT, are you referring to AK or another RVT?
AK specifically.
Okay. Madam Chair, I have no further questions.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. I'm going to start with just the few to get some clarification from kind of piggybacking on what Dr. Senhoff's questions were, and then I'll yield to somebody else if they so choose. So what you're saying is that it was a low dose of hours. The previous RBT, you were out and supervising at a higher frequency. I reviewed the billing records as well as the treatment records. And what I'm seeing is that on average, you made one visit a month to the house. There was a significant gap between, like, there's no documentation between October 19th and January 20th. And then there's no contact with another RBT from January 20th until, on this particular case, until almost April of 2028. And then the once a month started to resume again. Given the severity of the problem behaviors that were being reported, whether they were being seen within your one time every once or quarter meeting, given the severity of the problem behaviors, do you find that meets the clinical standard of care for case supervision?
Honestly, I mean, I would contend that I probably did. I mean, I'm certain that there were more things that I could have done in terms of prioritizing this case over other cases, and doing more in that sense to provide you know, the quality of care that I expect of myself. And so in that sense, you know, I think I can always personally improve. And, you know, I think in this case that I probably was, I may have met what the minimum requirement was, but I didn't meet the standards that the individual or the client needed in this circumstance.
And I'm curious here, because we're talking multiple standards. So it sounds like to me you're referring to the minimum requirement for RBT supervision, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you feel that you met the minimum requirement for RBT supervision?
Mostly, I would say, but obviously there are some, I mean, I would say mostly, maybe 80-85% certainty.
Okay. So, and I would agree, based on the percentages and what she's attested to, I would agree that her minimum requirements as an RBT were met. Okay. But then we have requirements to our health plans. We have requirements to medical necessity. We have requirements to our standard of care. There's even a health plan standard of care document that the BACB released. It's now housed in CASP. And that also has a minimum requirement of case supervision. Are you familiar with those requirements?
I have not seen those.
Thank you. Just to move this along, I'm just gonna ask a couple of more questions related to just the case supervision. It looks like in the HR file that we received that there was perhaps a letter that was written for committee members. It's page 844 of the PDF. It's not a formal letter. It's not even in chronological order, but it does appear to be an HR document outlining concerns with this particular RBT. However, it does look like it is documented that this RBT did come forth and request additional support, specifically on the date of October 26th. So that would have been during that 3-month period in which it does not have any documentation of any services happening. I mean, would you agree that it's true that she, and I know Dawn asked it, Dr. Senhoff asked this as well, but would you agree that she, on more than one occasion, did try to solicit support or help for this particular case?
So I would agree with that, but I would contend that at the time in October, well, I'm not certain what the date of is within that HR file, but the RBT AK in this instance would not have been on this case in October of 2021 or 2022 as a result of the individual's discharge in August of 2022. AK started on 1/17/2022 and was on the case until he was discharged in August.
So would you agree then that either these concerns were continued to be brought up after the discharge, and what actions were taken when she brought them up as still continued concerns with her level of getting support?
I honestly can't speak to those meetings that she might have had with HR. I was not present for them, nor was I included in any follow-up through my organization. But in terms of her approaching us broadly, me broadly, I guess, in this instance as the supervisor, you know, she did approach, you know, she did request help, and you know, I tried to provide support via, you know, modeling instruction and things, instruction predominantly, based off what I was seeing in my own individual sessions.
All right. I have no further questions on case supervision, so I'm going to see if any other committee members have questions before I proceed.
Do any other committee members have questions for Mr. Reinicke?
I'll ask. I have just a couple of questions with regard to your training. I mean, in reading the documentation, I'm looking at you know, information around some aggressive behavior. I see that ultimately discharge occurs because the individual is going to a group home. I understand that the guardian in this case was also grandma. So I understand that this was, you know, complex in many senses of the way. In terms of the aggressive behavior that's noted on the discharge or in some of the documentation, the clinical documentation from your team, what, you know, you mentioned that you had some additional training, and I was going to didn't want to interrupt you as you were speaking. But what training, what areas of training have you gone through in order to be able to deal with, let's just say you said this child had gone through some trauma, you said that there had been, you know, some significant issues for this individual. Have you gone through any additional training, worked with additional BCBAs that are trained in severe complex problem behavior, or children that have experienced trauma and that are engaging in said behaviors?
Well, within my professional experience, I've worked with a number of cases that are similar, I guess, in scope you know, individuals that are highly aggressive, individuals that have experienced trauma in the past. And based off of that experience within the initial intake process, you know, that's why I felt comfortable with my ability to provide support to them, to this individual. You know, I tried very hard with the guardians and caregivers of the individual to ensure that the medical components were being appropriately resolved, I guess, or handled prior to, you know, prior to implementing behavior, like more behavior analytic services. So, for example, in the very beginning of my supervision of this client, he was meant to have a psychological examination to be diagnosed for, you know, whatever the psychologist was going to diagnose him with. And because of COVID, the telehealth appointment or whatever, you know, only lasted, according to the caregivers, like 5 or 10 minutes prior to the individual running off and them ending the assessment. And then it was only maybe 6 months later in the spring of 2022 that, you know, he was finally able, and with a relaxation of COVID protocols and kind of a decrease of that as a barrier, you know, he was finally able to go into, you know, the assessment center or medical office and, you know, be prescribed medications and the tools that would increase the efficacy of behavior analysis for him.
Thank you. I'll pause there.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes, Madam Chair. I want to back up just a little bit and look just to your response to the board complaint, or the response to the board complaint. It appears that the attachment was emailed from you, but it doesn't indicate an author, and you're kind of referred to in third person. Can you just clarify, was this a document that you wrote?
Yeah, I wrote it myself, and I wrote it in the third person as means of providing, I guess, clarity to you or the reader about the parties involved.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because I wanted to, just make sure we had for the record who authored it. Yes. And going through the documentation, I mean, there is a lot of typos and missed sentences, like where a sentence starts and then cuts off. And this will kind of piggyback into some of my upcoming questions, but I'm just curious, at one point it said that the guardians had a negative 922% decrease in progress per parent training or caregiver training. On multiple occasions, the caregiver's name is spelled different ways. I mean, as a general practice or within your organization, do you have a process for like a peer review or going through for quality assurance? Because I mean, it was tough to move through a lot of these documents. So can you kind of speak to what you do to ensure that your written documentation is that of a graduate level professional?
Yeah. So, I would have to specifically review, I would have to specifically review the documents that you're referring to in terms of the, like, the caregiver's name. Her given name was not what she used broadly.
Well, let me just clarify. I'm not worried in understanding what the error. I mean, they were.
Okay.
I do a lot of reading of papers. These were definitely grammatical errors and incomplete sentences and thoughts. So I'm not interested in an explanation there. I'm asking, do you have a process for peer review so that before you're asking families to sign things or presenting something to somebody else, that they're able to review and help catch some of these errors or quality control issues?
We have not in the past, no, had any quality insurance at present. That's one area in which the aforementioned RM is implementing as a means to ensure a higher level, I think, of a service, so that we are continually improving, what we provide to clients.
Thank you. So piggybacking on that, in the reports, so first you mentioned that there were, other medical concerns and other treatment providers, but in each of the reports, the initial report and then each subsequent 6-month progress note, all of those sections are either state there's no other service providers or there's, no diagnostic information. And then as you move through, there's things stated in there such as, we are trying Ritalin with him. Is this something, like, who's we? Is that something that your treatment team was recommending? Is that something that was parent report? Like, who are you referring to when you're kind of moving through, like, who all is involved in the team?
Sure. Any type of medication would have been reported by the caregivers in those instances and would have been included through the prior medical history that we would have collected at the various times of the progress notes. So that would have all been reported by the caregivers specifically.
So if we have no prior medical records that were, the board staff subpoenaed a full client record.
Sure.
That does not include the copies we have before us, does not include any prior medical records. It does not, in fact, the intake paperwork just has the client's name. The rest of it is blank. So would it be your kind of position that perhaps a full client record hasn't been provided?
I would presume that to be the case, then yes. I know that through the board, I know that we initially apparently had sent, my organization had sent the previous, the entire case file, and it was not received purportedly. And so in the beginning of this month, a follow-up was sent to me and I, reorganized, I generated the document myself, and then it turned out that, we had already resent it and that the board had reached out again to the organization and they had sent it prior to my, to me sending it to you guys personally. So it seems that that is the case and that some documents or some components are missing from that chart.
So would you be able to submit to the board your version that you've gone through and actually attested to, yes, this is the complete file?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay. Cause yeah, there's a lot of, like I said, the intake paperwork is completely empty. There's no custodial paperwork or any type of information there. There's no documentation for session notes that occurred on Fridays in the clinics. They were billed to the funder, but no documentation to support them. I mean, I would be interested to see a completed file. On that note, you mentioned several times that there was kind of care coordination and co-treatment happening. How are these billed to the funder? Like what, how you said that there was co-treatment happening with the one-on-one technician. How was the technician doing one-on-one services while another therapy provider was also billing one-on-one services?
So that is something that our organization is apparently contracted for. I have brought, you know, I've raised that question myself with them, and they indicate that it's within our contract to do. In terms of the one-to-one sessions, typically, if billing were to occur, it would only be for, I specifically, if I were billing in this instance, would only bill for behavior analytic services that I was providing for those opportunities. If I were not providing any like actual behavior analytic services and I was supporting, then they were otherwise unbilled by me, but I would still write like a session note indicating what occurred within the session. So that's what I am aware of.
So to let you know, because here's the piece of that is you are the responsible party. So whether you're the person that's billing or the RBT is billing under your extended authority, like I said, that every Friday from December to May is missing any documentation, all of which was billed to the funder. So again, that would fall under your responsibility. Hopefully in getting a full client file, we could look at all of the different documentation. Similar to what Dr. Davy had brought up as far as kind of the discharge paperwork and some of those things, on all of the reports, so starting with the original one, and then you completed one on July 28th, 2022, prior to handing it over to the new provider, and then the new provider within, you know, just a couple of weeks completed a discharge. In every single one of those reports, again, it's listing that care coordination's happening, billing is happening, that there's care coordination. Can you kind of speak to us as to why even the progress reports do not tie in those medical records you're referring to or a summary of the care coordination? Again, they all just list there are no other service providers.
I'm not certain why that would be the case. It would typically indicate or be indicated on those reports what kind of coordination of care is occurring in terms of other therapies that the client is enrolled in.
And on the discharge as well, but on each of the reports, I mean, it was basically the same information kind of just regurgitated with new dates updated. Can you kind of just speak to your process of when you're writing a progress report as to what information you utilize to complete that report?
Sure. So for each progress report, I evaluate the data both, you know, at the time of the progress note, but during my other sessions with the client. And within that, I evaluate, you know, how the individual is doing based off decreased rates of challenging behavior, increasing trend lines for skill acquisition goals, and things like those. And I evaluate him based off, I evaluate clients based off the observations I'm making with my own direct work that I engage in with them. For example, on these one-to-one sessions that I would partake, there would be instances of further challenging behaviors that led me to maintain the goals that I had started or I had implemented with him. I was hesitant, honestly, about making too many drastic changes to his programming as a result of the reactivity that he would kind of display when a contingency was modified within the home and then within the clinic environment as well. And the generalization was the component that was difficult to carry over into different environments and settings for him.
Thank you. I have a couple more documentation questions, and again, we may just need to revisit them when we have the full client file. It's stated in all progress reports and all of the progress reports, so the initial report and all progress reports, there's a statement that says this is in baseline. A formal FBA will be completed after the initiation of services. Again, I'm not after, and this was in every single progress note, so I'm not sure what initiation of services would have triggered that, but at any point, was a functional behavior assessment completed?
Yeah, we collected antecedent behavior and consequence data within the home environment where sessions were taking place to identify the functions of the behaviors that were being observed in those settings.
Okay. And all of that data is going to be in the complete file when we receive it, as well as the assessment itself and any other documentation?
That should be there, yes.
Okay. After completing the FBA, was there a behavior intervention plan put in place?
There was. The specific behavior intervention plan was more focused on the functional communication as a goal rather than so there was a BIP behavior intervention plan incorporated within his skill acquisition and behavior reduction goals. Yes.
As far as the crisis plan, again, all the documents say a crisis plan is not needed, including documents that say things like I observed high risk behaviors during this session. But then it goes on to say that there are no safety concerns and that a crisis or safety plan are not warranted. Can you explain to me kind of the discrepancy as to why at every review it was determined that a safety plan was not warranted, yet your decision for not bringing him into the center for more hours was specifically due to the safety concerns?
So within the crisis, within a crisis intervention plan, I became CPI certified at the very, it was a process to get certified based off the availability of instructor opportunities. So CPI is only available to be trained a certain amount of times. Initially, the grandmother was, or the caregiver or grandmother was providing those types of intervention plans or interventions to the client. And because the RBT was not trained in them. I didn't want, or I was hesitant. I didn't want the AK in this instance to provide any implementation of those interventions without appropriate amounts of training.
All right. I'm trying to limit my questions. So just jumping back, because I apparently didn't organize it as well as I thought I did, just jumping back to a statement you made earlier today, you stated that you were not in any of the meetings specific to AG, now AK, related to HR concerns.
Correct.
Okay, so we have before us a file dated April 27th, 2022, and it does look like it is a reference to a write-up in which you, another individual, I believe it may have still been the owner of the company, and this RBT sat down. She identified pretty well, per the HR documentation, some very important considerations around the dimensions of ABA and reflection of adequate medical necessity for services. And as a result, it appears that there was a write-up for potential ethical concerns because she had kind of not followed the proper chain of command. Can you kind of speak to what that's referring to?
I would have to look at the specific notes of that to provide a fuller explanation. My inclination is that
Madam Chair, I'm having just a small speaker problem. Hold on.
Okay.
I'll pause my questions for now if somebody else would like to take over while I fix my audio.
Okay. Dr. Davey?
Yeah, just a question about the documentation. Obviously, what I'm hearing is we're obviously going to need to do another request for records, given that we do not have this sufficient records today to come to a conclusion about what's going on with this particular client. That is my feeling as of now, and I am quite ready to move on that action when Dr. Davis-Wilson is concluded her questioning. I also think in terms of the documentation, the supervision record for AK, I don't believe that I saw the entire package in there with regard to her RBT supervision. Did I miss that somewhere in the records?
I honestly have not seen. I didn't collate the supervision records or the medical information that was provided to you, so I can't comment further on like what you received or what you may not have received ultimately, I guess.
And I guess, so that's fine. And I believe that the subpoena was clear in terms of supervision records. And so we may need to re-highlight that in our request, second subpoena, because I want to be able to see with regard to AK's RBT status, I want to see those supervision records that you would be required to keep per the BACB, as part of this, is this request. So board staff, as we look at expanding or clarifying or re-requesting documentation that Dr. Davis-Wilson's already identified, I would also ask that the entire RBT supervision log for individuals involved in this case, whether that goes past AK or not, I would like to see that as well. But I also am of the mindset that at this point, I have more questions than I have answers. And I think the only way I'm going to feel comfortable with answers is to read the documentation, not necessarily Mr. Manecki's verbal responses around this. Thank you.
One thing I'd just like to clarify for the committee, there's been a lot of back and forth between me and the agency representatives about supervision and clinical records. And so I think it'd be helpful for Mr. Reinecke to compile that information and go over it with those agency representatives before sending that information to us. So I just wanted to relay that piece to him. Thank you.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, did you have any questions or?
I just have one more, and well, I have a lot more. I'm like Dr. Davy, but I do have one that I think is an important one. And that's going to be related to the billing of the progress report. So again, a lot of these documents were just regurgitated from the 6 months before, even if the data or some of the summaries at the bottom changed, they were maybe a sentence here or there, collectively, maybe a page and a half worth of stuff. But it shows here that you're billing upwards 7 and 8 hours for these reports. Can you kind of speak to that?
So in addition to the changes in the report itself, assessments were conducted with caregivers, and direct assessments were completed every 6 months, as well as direct assessments that were completed with the client in terms of, direct testing of skills and things like that were also conducted. So that that would be attributed with that.
Can you speak to why that wouldn't be included in the report?
All of our assessments via our data program, I guess, where we store our medical, our patient charts, has the assessments as their own documents. And then we submit both the written progress notes as well as any assessments together, but they're typically not included within the they're sent to the payers, but they're typically separate from the progress notes in terms of specifically what's within those, I guess, that if that makes sense.
Are they summarized, or are you just saying like the grids and stuff are completed and submitted?
Typically they are summarized within the assessments reports and things. So yes.
Okay. And then I had one question with regard to the Vineland. So it does state that for this particular client, your choice assessment was the Vineland. Do you administer the Vineland online or in person?
In person.
Okay. I have no other questions at this time.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, can I ask you a question on timing for, I know you're stepping down from the full board. What is your attendance status for this next meeting for this committee?
I will be at committee only effective today. I will be at the next meeting, and I'm happy. I've let board staff know that I'm happy to continue to assist. We talked about, you know, just some potential transition assists for Dr. Senhoff's first and second months. So I'm happy to help.
The reason I asked, because I believe you, like me, probably have a significant number of questions. And so if it's important for us to get them on the record here so that we can address them later, like I understand that. And so I just wanted to make sure we were not going to not have access to your thoughts going forward around this.
No, I appreciate that. And I do believe, and board staff, Ms. Galvin can correct me if I'm wrong, but at any time, I do believe a committee member, either at the request of the board or to be requested to, can speak at board members. It's not like a prohibited thing, I don't believe. So I'm happy to help. Most of my questions are around, like, if we had the full client document, perhaps a large number of my questions would be addressed. I think, though, that kind of where my stance was on, I just want to make sure, let's see if anybody else has any other questions, and then I'm good with concluding my questions
for now and moving to discussion.
Are there any other questions before we move to deliberations? Okay. The committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note that deliberation is a time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees, even though we don't have one today. Dr. Davis-Wilson, will you please begin the deliberations?
I know it's getting late in the afternoon, but I would like to make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
The motion has been made by Dr. Davis-Wilson to go into executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice. It has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed? Nay. The motion carries. Malice, I see your hand is up.
Yes, I'm sure I need to give one more code word. So the next code word is triple digit. Triple digit. Thank you.
We are back in open session and we will resume deliberations. Would anyone like to deliberate any further, or is there a motion that is ready to be made?
Madam Chair, I think that I can put this in the form of a motion. I make the motion that we need to make a request for additional documentation and records, that at this point, I do not feel like we have the full clinical record for this particular client. I don't believe we have the full RBT supervision record, not the clinical supervision, but the RBT side of that supervision and documentation as required by the BACB around supervision for the complainant, as well as any other RBTs that would have been working on that case. So I'd like to see that put forth. I also want that to be, Mr. Murecki, I think that you need to work with your employer and yourself to make sure that this is in a timely fashion that this gets back to us. This is something that should be readily available to you to be able to be get back to us so we can take a look at this. Today's conversation concerning, and so I think the quicker we can look at this, the better we all feel. So the motion is for a request of additional records, as I've outlined. Maybe there's additional records that others are interested in. If there's others that would like to be added.
Board staff, do you understand the request of the committee?
I do. I would request, if Mr. Reinecke understands what the committee is requesting of him specifically, do you have any questions on that?
I understand, I think.
Okay. Dr. Davis?
We will be receiving a subpoena that outlines the documents.
Okay.
Yeah, I know Dr. Davey mentioned like the RBT supervision. I think even just assurance that that is the full HR file. Like I said, there's no trainings, compliance trainings, competency demonstrations, ongoing performance. I mean, it's that also seems to be just a couple of pages that I think would be important to have.
Specifically, Dr. Davis-Wilson, are you thinking some of the required trainings through, given that the billing records show that this is through an MCO through Access, are you thinking some of the RELIAS required trainings around services that are essentially required by Access?
Yeah, and even the CPI certification, there isn't a ton that I think the certifications are necessarily going to yield one way or another, but I think it's an indicator that perhaps we don't have everything in front of us. Because when we request an entire HR file and we get just the things that one employee may have, ruffled feathers on and a couple of other documents,
I'm not sure that that's an entire HR file. And especially if we've got him attesting to having completed CPI training with her and all of those things, like where are all of those documents? And part of our ethics code does require that we are able to establish that there's some level of competency prior to sending someone out into a home. And I mean, staff were placed in that home with nearly 3 months with no supervision. So where's the, you know, kind of clinical judgment to say, hey, this staff member is capable of doing this with no supports?
Mm-hmm. So we do have a motion on the table right now. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, we'll move into, let's see, it has been motioned by Dr. Davey to subpoena additional records, to recommend to the full board that we subpoena additional records to gain a better insight into some nuances of this complaint. It has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion carries.
And by virtue of that motion, the matter is tabled, and the recommendation or the request for subpoena doesn't have to go to the board. The committee can do that straight up.
Okay. Perfect. Do we need to amend what I said?
No, you're good.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for participating today to everyone who participated in this complaint review. We will be revisiting. Okay, and Dr. Reitz, I acknowledge that you need to leave in 4 minutes. Let's see how many of the applications you can get through for agenda item number 7. Scrolling. Six, agenda item number 6. Who do you think you can get through quickest?
Let's go. I am going to do my best. I actually was able to push a meeting I had, so I can stay on a few extra minutes and hopefully get through to you.
Okay, why don't you start with Jessica Zerbes?
You bet. So the applicant comes to us today having received their BCBA certification in April of 23. They completed a master's from Capella University in March of 23. Supervision occurred between October of 21 through April of 23 for a total of 2,083 hours, excuse me. This was across 2 supervisors. The applicant did indicate they submitted their final form for one of the supervisors. They were not able to get in touch with that supervisor. They did show us their multiple attempts to get the form specific for us, but they did submit the final form to verify those hours. So for me, I would say that this application could move forward.
Okay. Can we move on to applicant number 6, Sandy Kim?
We can. So this applicant comes to us having received their board certification in February of 18. They completed a master's degree at ASU in curriculum instruction in May of 17. They had a total of 2,452 supervision hours across multiple supervisors, all occurring between March of 16 and August of 17. And I did not note any issues and would recommend that this move forward.
Back to you again. These are all going to be you. Number 10, Jake Rasmussen.
Yes. So the individual indicated that they are licensed in the state of Utah. They received their board certification in January of 21 and completed a master's in applied behavior analysis from Utah Valley University in December of 2020. Supervision occurred across multiple supervisors, all in good standing, all licensed in the state of Utah, and that occurred between August of 19 and December of 20 for a total of 1,645 hours, and I did not note any issues with this application.
Okay, we will move to applicant number 15, Lauren Blair.
This applicant comes to us also indicating a license that they hold in the state of Michigan and received their board certification in February of 21. They completed a master's degree. Ooh, can you still hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A master's degree at University of Cincinnati in August of 18. They had supervision between August of 15 and January of 19 for a total of 1,678 hours. They did indicate yes to question 12 related to a fairly recent incident that occurred in January of 23. The applicant was on the call. I don't know if they are still with us. I'm not seeing them.
The number ending in 973, it doesn't appear so.
So the only, they indicated that this was in relation to a DUI. They have continued to engage in all of the requirements from this incident. But I did have a question related to their statement. And really that question is just, they indicated they were not practicing at the time of the incident, but I would be interested to find out more about whether or not they've reported that to both the licensing board in Michigan as well as the National Certification Board. So I'm wondering if board staff can reach out for further clarification around that. I think that's an important bit of information for us to understand before we move forward.
Yes, Madam Chair, Dr. Rates, I think consistent with some of, you don't see a lot of entirely similar instances with these events happening, recently where there are unfulfilled court-ordered requirements or yet to be completed court-ordered requirements. I think the committee, for consistency purposes, would want to issue a fair and have an interview.
Wonderful. So that would be my recommendation. Thank you, Ms. Pakenham.
Okay. We'll move on to applicant number 19, which is Cassandra Hamilton.
Yes, so this applicant comes to us having received their board certification in May of 23 after completing a master's degree in special education at ASU August of 22. They had a total of 1,501 hours across multiple supervisions. This all occurred in California where there's not licensure, and I did not note any issues with the application.
Okay. Applicant number 20 is next, Olin Halcrum.
Yes, so this applicant comes to us having received their board certification in July of 21, completing a master's degree from National University in 2019. Was across multiple supervisors, again, in the state of California. All of that occurred between July of 19 and September of 2020 for a total of 1,500 hours. Again, I did not note any issue with this application.
Okay. That is all of the applicants from agenda item 6A. We will move to agenda item 6B again, which is Rachel Robinson. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on this application by universal recognition.
Yes. Oh, I'm not sure if I was muted. So I did review this application. The individual is licensed in the state of Virginia. It's in good standing. It has been in the time frame required. I also reviewed residency information that was submitted, and that is also meets all of our qualifications. So for this, I also did not see any issue.
Okay. That concludes our review of applicants for licensure. Is there a motion that should be made?
Making them on all or just my recent review?
It will need to be all of them except for the registration, the telehealth registration.
This is Brian. I'll make the motion to accept those applications.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
That motion.
The motion has been made to move forward these applications as prescribed earlier in this meeting. That was made by Dr. Davey, and it has been seconded by Dr. Stenhoff. Is there any discussion? Okay, we will now take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion carries. All right. We will move to agenda item number 8, new agenda items for future meetings. Are there any agenda items for future meetings?
Madam Chair, Dr. Davey, maybe allow him to go first, then I'll remind the committee about a few items that we'll put on the next agenda.
Okay, Dr. Davey.
Madam Chair, just an update as we move forward with the recommendation from the complaint that I saw today, that any correspondences or updates we get from those agencies be agendized or have Ms. Backenden to provide us an update as those become available.
Sounds good. Any others from committee members before we pass it over to Ms. Packanon to refresh us? All right, Ms. Packanon, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I know the committee wanted to see some information relative to what other boards, how they are adjudicating matters of unlicensed practice. And so I have a few, been able to collect a few examples that I will assemble for you. You want to have a discussion about telehealth, the telehealth registry. And then I know I've mentioned this too recently, there's a proposed new supervised experience requirements form that we want to introduce to the committee as a possible new tool to help you in substantive reviews of applications. So you may see some or all of those next month.
Okay. Any other items for future agenda? Okay. We will now move to agenda item number 9. I believe I've covered all of the other agenda items, even though we jumped from here to there to here to there. Agenda item number 9 is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
Okay, the motion to adjourn was made by Dr. Stenhoff. It was seconded by Dr. Davis Wilson. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Okay, the motion carries. This meeting is adjourned at 2:07 p.m.
20 minutes early, thanks.